The fire made that open, by the devil we return. Insanity or glory in a mind that never learns. A moment of something where the dark can reverse. Tell the lonely where to go. Get on the inside and let it burn. It's not the only will hold. Get on the inside and let it burn. The empty eyes are falling down.
So, welcome to Endpoint Sight, your Tuesday night broadcast on Republic Broadcasting Network. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button like a resident Brandon smashing through a new package of Depends undergarments. You can mail your check or money order to RBN, make it payable to RBN, mail it to Republic Broadcasting Network, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Call in your debit or credit card number to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Mike said he'll be glad to take your money. Keep free speech alive, because free speech ain't free. And this is our Tuesday night broadcast with the Dynamic Duo. You know the importance of my guest that I have tonight, how important this man is.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Standing well over 6'4", weighing well over 234.5 pounds of political science, analyzing brawn, Dr. Patrick Slattery. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Well, thank you very much, Jeremy, and I tell you what, I'm not going to make a joke today. We've got President Brendan R. Trojan, and he just, seconds ago, I mean, I'm bringing you the latest news. Literally, seconds ago, he told young transgender Americans that he'll always have their back.
Ooh, what would Pete Buttigieg say?
Well, he's in the audience, you know. He's in the audience, and he's sitting next to the lesbian in the cabinet, who's Secretary of Energy, I believe. It's not good. He's still talking. I guess I'll turn it down. I was trying to squeeze the last little bit out of it that I could.
This would be the State of Disintegration address. Because we're not a union.
Well, it's the absolute state of whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that started at 8 p.m. Central Time. I caught the first 45 minutes of it and took notes. And being the tenacious political scientist that you are, you held on to the bitter end there.
Yeah, it sounds like he's kind of wrapping it up. He's just going on, like, the various touching, the touchstones for his own people. So he's talking about homosexuals and trannies and abortion and things like that. He's probably wrapping it up.
Our values,
yeah. The values that define us as a people.
In the beginning, I'm glad that he did start off with the Ukrainian thing and Putin, so I took a few notes on this. I'm gonna go through my notes and compare them with yours,
mm-hmm.
and let's see what we come up with. So he starts off talking about how the horrible, aggressive Putin met the Ukrainian people on the streets. His armies met the great people of Ukraine, citizens who were blocking tanks, citizens turned soldiers. And I'm sort of summarizing there, but this kind of goes along with the propaganda that I've been seeing for the last few days on social media, how that, like, ridiculous stuff like Miss Ukraine, mm-hmm. this gorgeous, hot, you know, young 20-something 115-pound female supposedly took up military arms to defend the border of Ukraine. And there's many more. Like, I covered some of them on my show last night, on some of the propaganda that they're slinging to the right-wingers here to try to get them all pro-Ukraine. But his beginning of his speech sort of played into that, this propaganda that Ukrainian citizens are taking up arms, regular, everyday citizens, to fight the horrible Russians. What did you get on that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the main thing is that all this business about this being unprovoked.
Yeah.
That is just such a lie. There has been, what now, 33 years of nonstop provocation, or at least 32 years of nonstop provocation. And I took out from my bookshelf, there was a book, War with Russia, written by Stephen F. Cohen. He published it in the autumn of 2018. I believe he died in the autumn of 2019. And I hadn't read it before because it was based on articles and a John Batchelor radio shows, which I had all read or listened to already. So I hadn't read it as a book, but I took it out last night. And, you know, and I read an article he wrote in 2014. And of course, he was very prescient. He was predicting exactly what would happen if the American policy of nonstop provocation, expansion of NATO, ignoring the very legitimate security concerns of Russia, bullying. I mean, we've had just nonstop bullying, nonstop provocation. And I know I've gone through the whole list, NATO expansion from country to country to country. In spite of the promise that was made at the end of the Cold War to President Gorbachev that NATO would not expand in exchange for a united Germany remaining in NATO, you've got that. But of course, you've also had since 2014, you've had this constant low grade military assault on the Donbass, just off and on shelling, and it's killed thousands of people. And it was ramped up last week immediately before Putin's invasion. And the invasion, first of all, there's absolutely no way you can say it's unprovoked. I mean, what definition of provocation would A, the expansion of an explicitly anti-Russian military alliance not be a provocation? B, the shelling of ethnic Russians who for 8 years have been deprived of all sorts of rights, the right to use their own language in their own schools. C, the president of Ukraine stating that he will look into acquiring nuclear weapons. I mean, just provocation after provocation, and of course, a coup d'etat in 2014 that took out a government that had been elected with the support not only of ethnic Russians, because they're not a majority, but with the support of ethnic Russians and a lot of Ukrainians. It was a CIA-sponsored coup. So by what definition is that not provocation? And in fact, I would say it's justification. It is justification for the actions that President Putin took.
And you mentioned Zelensky. If you could, let's elaborate on that just a little bit, on this fake puppet government. Zelensky, this is the same Zelensky that Trump made a phone call to. Exactly. And this was about Biden's son, Hunter, and all of the money. President Joe Biden, as vice president, was using his power to get his son like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of deals with this government. And this is all documented on the Biden laptop. Mm-hmm. This is the same Zelensky, right?
Yes. So Zelensky was inaugurated president of Ukraine, I believe in 2019. I guess it was 2018. And he had made a phone call, and shortly after he was inaugurated, President Trump made a phone call to him, asking him to look into, a congratulatory phone call. But in that congratulatory phone call, suggested that he look into illegal activities that were committed by American officials, in particular Joe Biden. Now, the thing is, Joe Biden has chlamydia has been, she's been made the point man for the border and the point man for this and the point man for that. And Obama had made Vice President Biden the point man for Ukraine. And Stephen F. Cohen, who died before it was apparent that Joe Biden would become president, regularly referred to Joe Biden as the viceroy of Ukraine. He was on the phone every week or so to Poroshenko, who was the president at the time. So he's on the phone every week, but of course he's not a foreign policy person. He's not a very intelligent person, and the person actually running the show was Victoria Nuland. But Biden was as a corrupt politician was exploiting it for his own enrichment via his son.
A couple of interjections. I looked it up. Zelensky assumed office 20 May of 2019.
Yeah. There we go. Okay. And this phone call would have happened. Right. It's hard sometimes to recall these things. The phone call would have happened in probably June, late June or so. It was shortly after he'd become president, I'm pretty sure. And then all the beans got spilled by Eric Ciaramello, what were they calling him? What were they calling that guy? He wasn't called the leaker. He was called the whistleblower. He was the whistleblower. Well, I don't know what he really blows, but he they never named him, but that was the guy. He was somebody who worked at the NSA, and he divulged what was said, which was, there was nothing wrong with what was said, but then you had all these Jews crawl out of the woodwork, like Alexander Vindman, who was on the NSA. You had former ambassador to Ukraine. Well, at the time, actually, ambassador to Ukraine, she got relieved of her duties. Masha Jovanovich. All these Jews crawled out from the woodworks, and these law professors, and so they were the people who were featured in the impeachment proceedings, which would have started did they start in September? Is that when they started, or maybe it was October? It was in the autumn. Yeah, shortly thereafter.
Let me just clarify, and this is, and I mentioned that date, of course, not to do a gotcha, but we're just
trying to. No, I couldn't remember 2019, 2018. It's so hard sometimes to remember these things.
And I want to make sure that I've got it clear so that the audience can get it clear. So the former president of Ukraine that was in the puppet government set up by the U.S., Poroshenko, he was involved with Vice President Biden in getting Vice President Biden's son, Hunter, these deals, right? All of this money in energy deals. And so when President Zelensky took office in May of 2019, then Trump called him that summer, in June or so, and said, hey, you need to look into this.
Right.
Right?
Right. Okay. Because the activities were clearly illegal, and Trump knew they were illegal. And of course, Biden, as vice president and viceroy of Ukraine, bragged publicly. He bragged publicly about getting the Ukrainian government to fire a prosecutor that he didn't like, a prosecutor who presumably was looking into or could have been looking into his son's activities or the company of that the son was on the board of. He bragged about it publicly. He said that he was in Ukraine and that he was there to, like $1 billion in aid or something. And he said, well, you're not getting this aid unless you fire this prosecutor. And son of a gun, he said, son of a gun. Wouldn't you know it? An hour later, he was fired. And he was bragging about this publicly.
that was one of the things they tried to base an impeachment for Trump on, was making a phone call to Zelensky. Right. Because Biden was going to be a candidate for president, and they were going to try to paint this Watergate-like type situation.
Well, and, you know, this was 2019, and in 2019, you know, Biden was the front runner, but he was a very weak candidate, and it wouldn't have mattered whether Biden wound up being the candidate or Elizabeth Warren or Buttigieg, but the main thing was to it was an impeachment against Trump. Even if Trump wasn't going to be convicted and thrown out of office, it would have been an embarrassment for him, and it was an embarrassment for him.
This is a question. This is a question I've been wanting to ask you on the air. So why Biden? Like, why this blundering dolt? Because in summer of 2019, the FBI had Hunter Biden's laptop. So my whole theory was the reason they selected Biden was because they knew that they had the goods on the Bidens, and they knew that they had leverage on him. And that's why Biden, because they had the Hunter laptop, right? That's what I'm thinking. What do you think about that?
It could be. I mean, about a week before or within a week before Super Tuesday, maybe about 8 days before Super Tuesday or something. I told one of my friends who is into betting, to bet. I said Biden's not going to win a single primary. I said Biden has never even won a single delegate before, let alone a primary. He's not going to win a primary. He's run twice already. This is his third time around. He's not going to win. I mean, that was my own personal feeling. He had come in either third, fourth, or fifth place in the first few primaries and caucuses. He was, you know, he was way back in Iowa, way back in New Hampshire, way back in Nevada. But then they were going into South Carolina. I guess South Carolina was the fourth contest, and all the black ladies came out, I think especially the obese ones. They all came out and voted for him. They were rallied, and on the back of that, then this is just about the time you had the whole COVID stuff starting, and I guess the Super Tuesday was like, what, March 1st or something? It was the first Tuesday in March. And between the South Carolina caucus or primary and Super Tuesday, you had most of the other candidates. Well, you had Klobuchar and Buttigieg drop out and endorse Biden. So there was some move to get Biden. And then in the immediate wake of Super Tuesday, you had everybody but Bernie Sanders and Tulsi drop out. And so there was some sort of group decision made. Exactly who was the group and who was putting pressure on, you can decide for yourself. There was some sort of decision made that we don't want it to be Elizabeth Warren. We don't want it to be Bernie Sanders. We don't, you know, Buttigieg or Klobuchar. We're going to have it be Biden. And it could be because of the goods. It also could be because by that time, you're already getting like the fake pandemic hysteria going. And as soon as this happened, they started postponing primaries. And the thing is, by postponing primaries, that was like a death knell, is that what you call it? To Biden and to the extent Tulsi had any chances, Tulsi, because what were they going to do? They can't just furlough their staff and then have them come back 3 months later when the primaries start, and they can't raise money. So it may have also been because they figured that with a the elections being the primaries being shut down, there wouldn't be any need for campaigning. He wouldn't have to go out in public. You could have a basement campaign, and that might have also been a factor. But you know, your idea is something, and I don't know who made the decision, but there was some sort of consensus was reached among important people, and they decided on Biden. He was selected. He wasn't elected.
We'll be back after the break.
Sorry about that.
Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, sierramadrepreciousmetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast two-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Awake every morning and the cold winds cover me.
Okay, we are back. Pinpoint Sot with the dynamic duo. And we did a little tromp down memory lane with the Democrat primaries. And, you know, I was putting forth the case that they probably selected Biden because they had the most goods on him with the Hunter Biden laptop. And he would be easy to manipulate. But early on, even in early 2019, I was making the case that it would probably be Biden and Harris because Biden would seal up the white working class vote. You know, they would think that Biden would take the white vote from Trump and that Harris would take the minority vote. That's sort of what I had said. Not that I'm all that great. I just took a stab in the dark. Happened to be right.
Yeah, who did I say was going to be vice president? Wasn't it somebody? Wasn't it something like anybody but Harris?
Yeah. I should have bet on that, man. I could have had a bottle of scotch. Anyway.
The only election I really, really predicted was Trump. That I picked Trump really, really early on, and I was right. Otherwise, I don't have the greatest record.
Let's go on and analyze this state of the disunion or the state of the disintegration address, because we're not unified. One of the things Biden said is that Putin rejected diplomacy, and now Putin is isolated. Now, he's not wrong on the second point that everyone is seeming to isolate Putin. Mm-hmm. You have all of Europe coming together, and with the exclusion from SWIFT, he made the point also that the ruble is being weakened 30%. Do you think this is a way to try to get the Russian people to go against Putin and get them in favor of some sort of regime change?
Well, yeah. I mean, so Richard Haass, who is a Jew, and he is the head of the Council on Foreign Relations. Yeah, he's come out publicly and said that this has to be the objective is to regime change Putin. Now, Putin isn't as isolated as it seems, because remember, our news is highly filtered. So obviously he's and you know, yesterday night the Tucker show was so bad I just couldn't endure it. Tonight he actually did he had a very short monologue of his own, and you know, the thing is he's still saying like the invasion is unjustified and deplorable and all this stuff. But then he had on a lot of decent people. He had on the first person he had on was this Douglas McGregor, I think that's his name, and he's a colonel, and he spoke a lot of sense. And nobody came out and said Putin was justified, but they all came out and were talking about the provocations and talking about the history. And a thinking person would say, well, doesn't that mean it was justified? So he had him on. He had Tulsi Gabbard on. He had and Tulsi Gabbard was good. She's trying to get back together with me, I can tell. And she probably will. She'll probably succeed in that. And then also Glenn Greenwald. He had Glenn Greenwald on. And Glenn Greenwald was excellent. At the very end, he had that Victor Davis Hanson guy on, who honestly, I mean, I guess he writes books on Roman history or something, but he's just he's a stone cold take boomer, and is not worth listening to. Why is I talking about this? What was the question?
Well, we were getting back is Putin isolated?
Okay, so he's got China. And China, McGregor was pointing out that, yeah, he's got China rock solid. He also said, McGregor was saying that, and I've heard this from other people too, that for the first 5 days, he was proceeding very, very carefully in order to minimize casualties. And that seemed to be his game plan, to have as minimal casualties, especially civilian casualties amongst Ukrainians, as possible, you know, in the hopes that then Zelensky would be deposed and whatever, or would sue for peace, even if he's not deposed. At any rate, but with all of this encouragement from the outside and the weapons, I guess, that are being released, he can no longer play that cautious game, and so he's it's getting more destructive. But also, you know, like the president of Mexico has rejected sanctions against Russia. I don't know if people are hearing about this.
I didn't.
He rejected sanctions. And so Putin's not quite as isolated as it seems. And then the SWIFT thing could also turn out to be something that in the short term is a blow, but in the long term works out, because China, with Russian cooperation, but China developed this alternative to it called, what is it, the cross... border bank, I don't know, it's some, I can't remember, I think it's CIPS or something, SIPS, something like that, and it's an alternative to SWIFT, and if it catches on, that's a big deal.
Now, Biden mentioned airspaces. We'll have to come back on the inside of the break, but the U.S. airspace and most of Europe airspace is closed to Russia. And that's pretty significant. I think that's where it, you know, falls under isolation. I'm going to have you address that on the other side of the break on In Plain Sight.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Okay, and we are back to In Plain Sight. I was just addressing under the isolation of Putin, according to resident Brandon, the closure of U.S. airspaces as well as most European airspaces to Russian aircraft. What do you make of that?
Well, how much? Okay, so Russian aircraft. Oh, basically, they're just saying that you can't have Aeroflot fly into these capitals. So, okay, there's that. Russia has closed its very, very significant airspace to other countries. And so what does that mean? That means, like, all the routes between Europe and the Far East, you know, Japan, China, Korea, Taiwan, all these routes go, if they can't go through Russia, either they have to, well, then they have to go like down to India and, you know, make a stop in India, make a stop in the Middle East somewhere. So that's very, very inconvenient. So two can play that game.
And then I wanted to mention one more thing. We have a somewhat of a symbiotic relationship with Russia in regards to oil. It's very difficult to sanction Russia and say we're not going to buy oil from you when we rely very heavily on their oil sales. And so in response to that, Biden had mentioned that he was going to release 60 million barrels of oil from the reserves, from the strategic reserves. How many has he already released? What was that number?
Didn't he say 6 million?
6 million? Are you sure?
That number just keeps coming up. I don't know.
Wow. That's okay. Well, so anyway, yeah, they're going to release 6 million barrels. But is that going to last? Like, this is not sustainable. Just to get into the whole climate change lingo, this is unsustainable to have these sanctions on Russia. We're eventually going to get high gas prices.
Yeah, and the strategic oil reserve wasn't intended to be like something to manipulate prices. It wasn't a market smoothing mechanism. It was intended for an actual emergency, something like the Arab oil embargo, where industries were actually shutting down back in the 70s. That's the origin of it. And it has been maybe a couple of times they've drawn down on it to stabilize prices, but that's not what it's intended for, but that's what it's going to be used for.
And I've got an article that we may get to later on, either in this show or on your show, about the Russian UAE relations, United Arab Emirates, regarding
UAE, by the way, along with India and China, abstained from the United Nations Security Council vote condemning Russia.
Very interesting. We might get into that later. We have a caller on hold. Do you have another point or two to make before we go to a question from the caller?
No, let's hear the caller.
Okay. Mike, who do we have up? We have Fred. I think we have Fred up. Hey, Mike. Okay, Mike's talking to Fred, so let's move on. So let's just get to this article while we're at it. So Russia-UAE relations, United Arab Emirates. So the headline is from the AP, Ukraine War Forces, United Arab Emirates to hedge from Dubai. And my phone froze up. Oh, here we go. United Arab Emirates... The UAE campaigned hard for a seat on the UN Security Council in the country's international push to highlight the 50-year anniversary. That's all fluff. Let's get down to it. Yeah, basically, they're not going along with the sanctions on Russia. And so this is another avenue that Russia can use, right, to sell its oil.
It's hard to say. So one thing is if Russia can't sell to Europe, so the supply in Europe becomes less, right? And with less supply, but it's just as much demand, then you would expect oil prices to go up in Europe. But it's not as if Russia can't produce oil. So Russia's then they've got to try to sell it elsewhere. Well, now. Elsewhere means you've got a higher supply of oil or you know, you got a higher supply because they're trying to, and so Russia elsewhere would be selling it at a discount. They got this oil, they got to get rid of it, so they sell it at a discount. Depending on like United Arab Emirates traditional customers or whatever, that might mean that their own selling price could go down. Or it could go up, depending which market they're selling into. But of course, yeah. maybe also it's just that it's going to destabilize prices. And of course, Russia being a major producer, but they're outside of OPEC. They have over the past say 10 years or so, they've played a role in stabilizing oil prices. To the extent that, you know, even President Trump, when he was trying to be as tough on Russia as he could, still had to call up Russia and ask them to increase production to stabilize prices, you know, back in late in his administration.
Yeah, and this AP article does mention in a lower paragraph, for the Emirates, the UAE faces a major risk in upsetting Russia. Which has become an important trade partner and a source of tourists to the UAE and a military power across the wider Middle East. So this is not an easy thing to just isolate Russia. That's not just going to be that easy. There's lots of complications. There's lots of symbiotic relationships all over the globe. And Russia has a very powerful part to play on this scene.
Right. It's coming back to me. A couple of years ago, there was a point where, like, on the futures market, oil was at, like, negative. I mean, it was basically free on the futures market for, like, a few days. And I guess that was because both Saudi Arabia and Russia had flooded the market. And that was hurting American producers who had to sell into this same market and couldn't get a good price for it. And I think Trump actually had asked Russia to hold down production. So, I mean, it can go either way.
So what I want to do now is sort of step back and sort of analyze, maybe from a 30,000-foot view of this State of the Union concerning Russia. It's Biden's comments were very incendiary, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Very provocative. And the situation that we're at now, if I understand, is Russia has surrounded the capital of Ukraine, Kiev, and it's basically disabled the entire country of the Ukraine's airports. Russia's in control, and they're just sort of waiting because there seems to be a lot of civilian activity, and Russia does not want to take civilian lives and have that plastered all over the news, whether it's for humanitarian reasons or whether they just don't want the bad press. At the end of the day, they're not doing anything. They're being very careful.
Mm-hmm.
So we're here sort of at this point, and there's a lot of propaganda out there. And I'm just finding Biden's comments to be very incendiary.
They are. Yeah, they are. And so I'm not a military analyst, but from what I understand, what you said about Kiev being mostly surrounded, that's all true. What seems to be the Ukraine is run by Jews and foreigners who don't necessarily have the best interests of the Ukrainian people at heart. And it seems to be that the Ukrainian government is using the human shield tactic, so it's placing fighters in apartment buildings and whatnot. And there has been some video, and of course, all the video that comes out, it's always hard to know really what's fake and what's real. But there is some video that comes out that says that seems to indicate that people who live in the apartment buildings are angry that they're being used as human shields. And it seems that Zelensky is trying to goad the Russians into, say, shooting into apartment buildings or shelling apartment buildings because then it creates atrocities. Putin, the thing about, you see, the Russians and the Ukrainians are so closely related. And there's so many people who have, Ukrainians who have Russian cousins and Russians who have Ukrainian uncles or aunts or whatever. President Gorbachev was half Ukrainian, half Russian. So typical. It's so typical. So these aren't like, it's not like some groups you have closely related people like the Northern Irish, like the Catholic Irish and the Protestant Irish, who maybe they've been out of these throats for generations. That's not the case with Ukraine. These people have not been at each other's throats for generations. And if Russian TV viewers, Russian citizens saw pictures of Ukrainians, being killed en masse, they'll become very upset. So Putin has to be careful. And I think Putin looks at Ukrainians as being like more like his own people more than Zelensky does, the Jew Zelensky. I think the Jew Zelensky looks at the Ukrainian people as pawns that he can just sacrifice. They're just goyim.
Well, Ukraine and Russia, I mean, that's predominantly Slavic.
Slavic.
They Slavic, are basically Orthodox, the same very race. Close.
And the cradle of Russian civilization is in Kiev.
Hey, we have a caller that is ready for a question. Are you ready to take a caller, Patrick?
I'm ready.
Fred from Michigan. Go ahead, Fred. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. I recently learned that Vladimir, when he was in East Germany, he was bosom buddies with Angela Merkel in the Stasi. Apparently there's family lineage in each that goes back to some kind of Talmudic Kabbalah connection. He does have a Shabbat Lubavitch rabbi handler, doesn't he? And at several conferences, he paid homage to the Rothschild Bank of England and B.B. Nuts and Yehu. And he invited, in one of these conferences, invited all the Talmudic, the Khazar Sabbatai and Ashkenazi Jacobins to immigrate into Russia. And then, what I'm thinking is, with all the modern technology that, you know, I saw stuff on YouTube, where supposedly there were like 20,000 foreigners from different countries training, over the past several months. And then the actual on-the-ground photographs from some news source where Ukrainians were supposedly up in arms and defending their turf, and it turns out they've got fake guns. I mean, they faked the moon landing. That never happened. The NASA moonshot has now been conclusively proved to be a total fraud, a total fake.
Is it conclusive?
It's conclusive. All you got to do is here, watch the presentations. That's all.
I guess it's just as conclusive as Putin's.
You got to see the 1 9-minute one. NASA admits it never went to the moon. This is a UK science professor, might be a physics, I don't know. Anyway, it's entirely conclusive. Even James McCanny, who used to think, well, yeah, but then when he evaluated the evidence in these documentaries, he said, wait a minute, yeah, how would they get through the radiation fields unless they had 6 feet of lead?
Yeah, nobody ever thought of that. Yeah.
Fred,
we're not going into the moon today. We're not going to the moon. We can talk about the moon some other time. First of all, this Chabad Lubavitch handler. Okay, so Chabad Lubavitch doesn't run anything. Chabad Lubavitch makes babies. Okay, they're not the center of Jewish power. Mao took a picture with a Jew, and people say, oh, well, the Jews run China today. They still run China. Chabad Lubavitch, so if Putin has had a photo op, he's had a photo op with a zillion people, right? And, you know, like President Brandon R. Trojan has had a photo op with LeBron James. That doesn't mean LeBron James is his handler, okay? So there's, I mean, this business, Chabad Lubavitch runs Russia. If Jews ran Putin, if he was just one other Jewish puppet, why is there a war against him? And who's pushing this war? It's all Jews. So, I mean...
Well, I've heard this. I've heard this argument before. I actually addressed it on the Friday show on Richard Carey's Beyond the Official Narrative. We addressed an article that the whole thing is planned. And, you know, Putin and the Ukraine was planned to bring us into some new global order. And while I do believe in, you know, elites planning things, obviously Putin is going against the global world order here. And just to anybody that says that Putin is controlled, I would just point to Syria. You know, the overthrow of Assad was a huge part of forwarding the Greater Israel program, you know, and so Putin pretty much strengthened Assad, and Trump let him do that and got rid of ISIS. And because of Russia, you know, Syria is still intact, and that put a huge wrench in the Greater Israel project. So if there are Jews that advise and control Putin, they're doing a really bad job.
Okay, we have another caller, don't we?
We do, with just a couple of, maybe a minute before the break. Let's go ahead and take the break. Let's bring on Joe from Florida. And Joe, give us your question and hang on, and we'll address it on the other side of the break, and you can hang on too for retort. Go ahead, Joe.
Great, yeah, really quick.
Oh, okay. Hey, Joe. Yeah. Mike, I guess we can skip the break if you want to. Okay, Mike's skipping the break for you, Joe. Go ahead.
Wow, such royal treatment. I appreciate it. Thanks, Jeremy, and it's a pleasure to talk to Slattery, to talk to you. There's two things. At the very end, his sign-off on the speech tonight, State of the Union, Joe Biden signed off in this very weird and suspicious way where he always says, God bless the troops. And then he said, did you hear him? Go get him? Go get him or go get him? I find that very disturbing and weird, which is, I guess, par for the course for Biden. And then the second part I wanted to say was, I mentioned this actually once before, is that I have a feeling that the neocon Democrats are actually much more upset with Biden than it appears. You know, Democrats sometimes look like they're all together. But I think, and let me know if this rings a bell, Dr. Slattery, that they're still upset that he actually did withdraw the troops from Afghanistan. And then with this behavior, he's probably not going to get as bloodthirsty as they want him to. I mean, they obviously want a war with Russia, and I don't think he's going to do that. So my question is, it seems like maybe there's room for, like, the zombie war criminal Hillary to come back, or somebody like that who would be more of a neocon war hawk on the Democrat side to sort of replace him when they need him most, you know, to start this war.
Take that one, Patrick.
I mean, Joe Biden tonight, he read a speech, right? And you know he's reading it because every now and then he did things like skip a line. Instead of saying over the past weeks and months we have done such and such, he'd just say over the past we have done such and such. Well, nobody says over the past. There was a few words that got deleted there. And towards the end, he was starting to stammer more. At the beginning, he sounded pretty sharp, but he started stammering more. So obviously, you know, he's not that much in control. But he still is officially the president. And I heard one of somebody, I can't remember who it was, maybe it was McGregor, who I was referring to earlier from Tucker's show, who seemed to indicate that Biden and Sullivan, what's his name? Is it Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, were kind of dragging their heels on things like a no-fly zone. And, you know, he's still the president. He's been in politics for 40-something years. So I don't think he's totally out of the loop. I don't really know who's running the government. I think it's probably kind of by committee, and committees often it just means, you know, people have their different fiefdoms and kind of struggle over things. It would be so insane to escalate this more, and so maybe he is has an instinct towards restraint that some of the Jews in the State Department don't have. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think that they are there. The Ron Klain is actually more of a neocon war hawk than Biden is. And I think that those people that are behind him are actually not as united. There are definitely people who want to get him to do more and be more of a bloodthirsty war hawk. I'm not saying he's like a peace-loving guy, you know, but they are very bloodthirsty, you know.
The so relative to some of the people in his administration. Relative to some of the people in his administration, he might be dragging his heels.
And behind him is the junta of Jews who are desperate for war against Russia. So I think we're in a very terrible time. You know, it's much more alarming than it appears on the surface at this point.
It's hard to know. Yeah, I mean, no, I think you're right. And it's hard to know exactly what's going on. It's not at all transparent. I'm, you know, maybe other people know. I don't even know who's really calling all the shots. It's really hard It's hard to know. And it's also hard to know what the facts are on the ground in Ukraine, because there's the censorship is just so heavy.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I'll say the last thing I want to say about that is that I think actually the war is over already, and Putin is just waiting for the moment so that he's not baited into some kind of, you know, atrocity propaganda scheme where they start taking videos and makes it look horrible. I think that basically he understands the game much deeper than anybody on the other side. He knows that he could actually lose the war just on the propaganda. So he's sitting very tight, and time is on their side, on the Russian side. Why should they go rush in and make some terrible images on the TV when, after all, there's no way they could possibly win this war? I think it's already over, and he's the smart one biding his time.
Yeah. He's a serious person. He's a very cautious person. You know, having waited 8 years after that coup d'etat, and 8 years of all this, you know, signaling that eventually Ukraine's going to be part of NATO, he's shown so much restraint. He's very cautious. If there's a fault, if he has a fault, it's being too cautious.
And the last thing I would say, the big dynamic that the media is not covering at all, and hardly anybody's talking about it. Saturday on the 19th, Zelensky, out of the blue, announces that they're not going to abide by the Budapest memo, as if that's a minor thing. Is it that something that doesn't count? I mean, the president of that country outright says that, oh, we're going to start attempting to acquire nuclear weapons. You know, the treaty we signed. You know, that is actually, in my opinion, the crucial thing that changed the whole dynamic. It wasn't Putin that initiated. It's this Zelensky person.
Yeah, so that day there was that, and there was also increased shelling of the Donbass. Which mattered more, I don't know, but those it was one or the other or both together that seemed to be the last straw.
Exactly. Great. Thanks a lot, Jeremy, and thanks, Dr. Slattery. An honor to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Joe. And for the record, Fred in Michigan hung up. We did not hang up on Fred. I'm willing to discuss anything and everything on this show, full freedom of speech, but because of time constraints, we have to make it, you know, applicable to the subject, and that is Putin and the Ukraine. I think some people would say, well, this whole thing could be a hoax, because look at how they've hoaxed us in the past, but you just can't go down that road. You got to just deal with the realities that are coming at you. Patrick, we're going to continue this on the Patrick and Jeremy show tomorrow at 1 p.m. Central on National Bugle. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.